My name is Ritika Patni, and I am the founder of The Art of Health in Singapore and also a member of the core group steering Ayurveda Day celebrations globally, anchored by India Foundation's Center for Public Diplomacy and Soft Power. I welcome you to another episode of the World Ayurveda Podcast, where we've been bringing to you fascinating conversations with doctors, researchers, and enthusiasts and entrepreneurs from the world of Ayurveda. It gives me great pleasure to welcome our guest today, Dr. Ram Manohar, who is the research director of Amrita School of Ayurveda, and he has been contributing to the field of Ayurveda for over 25 years. He has, to his credit, of course, numerous publications in very reputed journals and also research papers. But what many of you may not know, that he was also honored with the Ayurveda Marga Pravartaka Award by L. Mahadevan's Ayurveda Foundation in 2014. And more recently, in 2017, he was also honored with C. Dwarkanath Memorial Award for contributions to contemporary interpretations to the principles of Ayurveda. He has made research visits and traveled around the world to spread the knowledge of Ayurveda from United States to United Kingdom, Canada, Argentina, Germany, France, Netherlands, Italy, Switzerland, Thailand, Sri Lanka, and many more places. And we are, of course, very honored to also have him as a part of the core group steering the Global Ayurveda Day celebrations. Thank you, Dr. Ram, for joining us.
Namaste.
So, Dr. Ram, we'll start from the very beginning, and you know, we would love to understand, how did you decide to study Ayurveda?
So I did not actually decide, it was destiny. My father wanted me to study Ayurveda, and I must confess that in the beginning, I resisted. So my father was a freedom fighter. And, you know, he met Krishna Kumarji, who had set up this unique Gurukula system of education in Coimbatore at that time. And it was a conversation between them that, you know, changed my destiny.
Wow. Wow. So I think diving slightly more, you know, deeply into that aspect of your life. So, you know, many of us know that you were part of Dr. Krishna Kumar's very unique Gurukula system. So can you tell us a little bit more about what that experience was like, and also how the modern system of Ayurveda education, of which you are such an integral part, differs or coincides with that experience?
Yes, I can say that, you know, in fact, even though my father had suggested, in the end, it was my decision. So my father had arranged a tour to this Gurukulam. You know, it is in the valley of the Anakatti Mountains in Coimbatore, in the outskirts of the city. And, you know, it was a visit to that place that finally made me to take a decision. So that I was actually enchanted with the nature that I beheld there. You know, the moment I stepped in that campus, there was something that stirred me very deeply inside. You know, I had never been in such deep contact with nature itself. I never knew that, you know, people could live in such close contact with nature. And I saw all the students there. Some of them were actually performing the kalari, you know, practice, you know, the martial art of Kerala, and that ambience of that environment. The one thing that struck me was that we as humans could establish a harmony and a relationship with nature. And that was, you know, what made me in that spur of that moment to take a decision. I felt this is going to be an entirely different experience. I had actually joined for the science group in a college in Calicut where we were living at that time, pursuing biology. I wanted to do medicine. And I had, you know, walked through the corridors of those huge buildings in the typical colleges, universities that, you know, we are learning all these subjects today. So in really stark contrast, this forest beckoned me, I mean, to the womb of life itself. And that is what I think really made our education very different. We were learning Ayurveda from the cradle of life itself, the direct contact with nature, which is the source of the knowledge of Ayurveda. Because from there, I realized that wherever there is biodiversity and there are humans and there is an interaction between nature and humans, there Ayurveda will manifest. And there were many interesting elements about our education. I'll try to be very brief. You know, we were trained right from the beginning to discover the rhythm in nature and, you know, build up our lives according to this cycle of time and space, you know, that nature puts us through. So we had to wake up very early in the morning at Brahma Muhurta. We had to, it was really quite cold in the mountainous ranges, you know, in Coimbatore. And in those days, it was even much more colder than it used to be now. And we would become alert by waking up in that cold and pouring cold water on our heads. We had to practice kalari, you know. And so from there, it began. You know, soon I realized that we were, you know, trying to transform our own personality. The tamas and rajas, you know, had to be transformed. We had to awaken sattva to basically receive the knowledge of Ayurveda. So in a gurukula, it is not just information that is passed on from the teacher to the student. There is a transformation of the individual that happens. It is like, you know, pouring milk into a vessel. You have to first clean the vessel before pouring the milk. So transformation of the individual and transfer of information both happened side by side. And this is what I learned there, that education is not just about gathering information or skills. It is about transforming yourself, you know, to a higher level of existence. And all our practices there, our intimacy with the teachers, we were a very small group. So this intimate living with the teacher, that is called as a gurukula, you become part of the guru's family. So if your parents gave your physical birth, you know, the guru gives you a mental rebirth. That is what a gurukula does. You are born a second time when you come out of the gurukula. So this harmonious blending of personal transformation with acquisition of knowledge and skills. So the idea is that when you are personally transformed in such a way, you are able to channelize all the skills and knowledge that you develop for the well-being and benefit of society. So that is the real, you know, purpose of education. So this is the inspiration that we got from this unique gurukula, thanks to all the teachers and that beautiful environment, which we had very hardly any buildings there. You know, we were living with humility. I mean, nature was bigger than us. We were living in very modest buildings. I mean, we all looked upon nature as our first home, and our own buildings were very small. And, you know, we lived in harmony with elephants, with snakes. And during that time, there was not one single incident of any, you know, encounter with wild animals. I still remember when we had to move out in the night to attend nature's calls, many of us would be confronted by wild elephants and we would run back in fear, but nothing happened. So we realized that this is the kind of aranyaka, which is there in the old Vedic tradition. The concept of aranya means, you know, withdrawing from any confrontation or fight. So the rishi is coming back to the forest to establish peace with all living forms. It is possible for humans to live in harmony with, you know, the rest of creation. So these are the lessons. I mean, this is really the place where Ayurveda originated. And I think to some extent, it was a great contribution by Krishna Kumarji to recreate that very environment in which perhaps Ayurveda originated many thousands of years ago. So I think it's a lifetime experience.
Wow, that just sounds so brilliant that I'm sure anybody who's passionate about Ayurveda would want to recreate that for themselves, you know, in their journey of pursuing Ayurvedic education. So thank you for sharing those really wonderful insights with us, Dr. Ram Manohar. One of the things that you did, you know, after you graduated, you know, you studied in the Gurukula system, of course, is to go on and practice, you know, as an Ayurvedic doctor, Vaidya, and you've, you know, had a really illustrious, you know, time as somebody who has taken Ayurveda to different parts of the world. But something that really is a landmark event in the many things that you pursued is the research study that you pursued with the National Institute of Health in the United States, which was a study on how Ayurveda could be used for rheumatoid arthritis. Can you share with us a little bit more about this initiative, why it was so path-breaking, and how greater recognition and validation of Ayurveda can be achieved in the world, you know, from the lessons that you can draw from this experience?
Yeah, I think, you know, the NIH study was actually a culmination in my, from my point of view, of a long journey that had begun even when I was a student. Even though I was quite fascinated with the environment and, you know, the experience of the Gurukula, I was quite skeptical about Ayurveda. In fact, there were a couple of times when I thought I must stop the course and go back. Because coming from a science background, when I was suddenly introduced to concepts like Vata, Pitta, Kapha, I thought, you know, perhaps I wasted my life. It's a nice life, but there is no substance in Ayurveda. It sounded also primitive. And I began to question. And at one point, I even thought that I must try to disprove Ayurveda. At least, you know, the conflict. This is a conflict that many students of Ayurveda go through. And I can say if I was not there in that Gurukula, I may not have survived the Ayurveda course. If I had joined any other, you know, institution, I wouldn't have got answers. So at a very young age, when Krishna Kumaraji put up a poster of Science and Spirituality Conference, I was the only person actually who went and asked him, can I attend this conference? Because I find that I cannot reconcile science and spirituality. They look totally, you know, at loggerheads with each other. And it looks like Ayurveda is based more on spirituality. So in that conference, a lot of Nobel, you know, laureates and eminent scientists were coming from all over the world, along with theologians, religious leaders, and, you know, spiritual masters. So this was when I was doing my first year BAMS. So Krishna Kumaraji made all the arrangements for me to go and attend that conference. When I thought that he would dismiss me, being so young, to attend a global international conference. So that was his vision. I mean, that was the Gurukula, you know, model where the aspirations of every individual person, you know, there are so many such experiences that all of us had. So that was a game-changing, you know, experience for me. And I began to start looking at science and spirituality on a common platform. But deep in my mind, I had always had the feeling that we must test Ayurveda. If Ayurveda is truth, spirituality is also truth. You know, it should be able to withstand the rigor of any scientific testing. And by some coincidence, you know, it so happened that when Krishna Kumaraji went to the United States for a health checkup, he always has this ability to convert adversities into opportunities. He had conversations with many scientists, some of his colleagues, and he came back with this golden opportunity of, you know, getting a funding from the National Institutes of Health, which is the first time Ayurveda is being funded by the NIH to do any clinical trial. And as destiny would have it, he invited me. I was not with AVP at that time. He insisted that I should come and do that study. And for me, this was the realization of an old aspiration. Now, the circumstances had come where I could put Ayurveda to the acid test of analysis. We had some of the most eminent rheumatologists involved in the study, and one of the apex bodies for research in the world, the National Institutes of Health, was funding it, and couldn't have asked for a better test. And the fact that Ayurveda survived this test, I think, is the moment in my life. So that study is so important for me. because it was the fulfillment, also not just of proving Ayurveda, but it was also a moment which convinced me that truth can withstand, you know, the most stringent test. And Ayurveda is surviving because it is truth. And we don't need to be afraid of, you know, testing. So this particular study is interesting because, you know, it was a breakthrough in the methodology. A new methodology was devised where Ayurveda, with its multimodal complex system of healing, cannot be studied using the modern reductionistic methods of research. So the rheumatologist who was involved in our study was very open-minded, and he was willing to tweak the randomized control trial design to accommodate the whole system Ayurveda, where treatments were given in an individualized way without compromising science. And this study, therefore, got published in one of the, in fact, the highest impact factor journal in rheumatology. It's the first time that that journal is even accepting any Ayurveda research article. So that was a landmark. And our study also won the Excellence in Integrative Medicine Research Award from the European Society of Integrative Medicine. The first time Ayurveda is getting recognized in Europe. And on top of it all, Dr. Edzard Ernst was a vehement critic of complement and alternative medicine. When he found our paper had got published in the annals, he wrote to us saying, we want to write a commentary on it. And we thought he was going to criticize, but we were surprised when he wrote a commentary recommending our study as a blueprint for future studies. This is the first on complement and alternative medicine. This is the first and last time that he has ever said anything positive about complementary and alternative medicine. So the thing is, this is the first and last time that a person like Edzard Ernst is, you know, saying something positive about a study on complementary and alternative medicine. This was also proof that, you know, if we collaborate with modern scientists in the true spirit of science, preserving the essence of Ayurveda, the tradition, and still not compromising science, this is possible. And this is a very, very important thing. I think Krishnakumar, this is one of the biggest contributions that Krishnakumar has made. And we will realize that only in the future. It was so futuristic that people couldn't really realize the impact of that. Because science and spirituality can come together. A system like Ayurveda and modern science can be brought on a common platform. And Ernst's response shows that even, you know, it's very easy for us to be self-congratulatory. We have to take the battle to the enemy's camp. I mean, it is when we are able to convince people who are really skeptic, that is when we have really made some achievement. And that is what made this study really very unique. And I think I was really blessed that Krishnakumarji gave me an opportunity to kind of, you know, lead this study from the India side. And I think this is a landmark step that was taken under his visionary leadership.
Thank you, Dr. Ramanohar, for weaving that really very fascinating and also poignant story of, you know, how you were able to realize your aspirations that you had developed when you were studying Ayurveda in the Gurukula system, you know, many years later, through this opportunity that Dr. Krishnakumar brought forward. Last couple of weeks have, of course, been difficult for many in the Ayurvedic community because of Dr. Krishnakumar's sudden passing away. And, you know, you as somebody who worked very closely with him, we would like to hear your thoughts on what you really think is his legacy.
You know, for me, the passing away of Krishnakumarji is an end of an epoch in the modern development of Ayurveda. Because he was such a visionary that he cut the path in a certain path and a vision for how Ayurveda should develop in the modern age. So what I have found in him is his ability to bring things that are extremely contradictory to each other, I mean, reconcile them and bring on a common platform. And this is what is actually needed for Ayurveda in the modern age, because Ayurveda's view is so panoramic. On the one hand, it's extremely spiritual. On the other hand, it can also be, you know, very rigorously scientific. So Krishnakumarji had seen this potential of Ayurveda. So even as a student, it was quite an experience for me to see, on the one hand, all these traditional rituals happening, the homas and the pujas on one side, and then the most advanced, you know, research laboratory is also there in the same campus. And we have some of the best scientists in India sitting and working there, looking at the science behind, you know, the usage of medicinal plants. So he had a vision where he could bring these two worlds together. I have not seen, you know, people really being able to do that. And his reach to people of all, you know, all walks of human life. Like, you know, one day, one moment you would see with the prime minister, another moment with the president, and yet another moment he would be with a playback singer or a film star or a politician or a poet, or even an ordinary man. He would be even sometimes sitting with children and, you know, coming down to their level. He used to make even so many interesting programs for, you know, inculcating cultural and spiritual values in children. So his ability to reach out, to bring Ayurveda into the public, you know, through such a process of synthesis, I think that vision is exemplary. He was the first person, not only to, he realized that Ayurveda can come back to in modern life, in modern age, only by changing the educational system. So he knew the vital areas where change had to be made. And so one of his biggest contributions was in the field of education. And I can also tell with some, element of pride that the contributions made by those who graduated from this college has been phenomenal. I mean, they have made their mark wherever they went in different ways. It's, you know, everybody could realize their own inner potential and contribute to Ayurveda in their own unique way, wherever they are. So that's a phenomenal contribution. And then taking Ayurveda globally, that was a great vision. He felt that Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu, the whole universe, I mean, Ayurveda is for the whole world. And so at a time when Ayurveda was dismissed as mumbo jumbo superstition, he knocked at the nose of the World Health Organization. And, you know, brought a scientific, proposal for studying Ayurveda scientifically. So there are many, many things like that. He wanted to bring back Ayurveda in the backdrop of Indian knowledge systems. I think that was a very deep vision that he had. He realized that we have to blend tradition with modernity. And this cannot happen just at the medical level, not just Ayurveda with modern medicine. We needed to blend the best of the traditional values with, you know, the modern advanced thinking. And it is in such an environment that Ayurveda would be able to rediscover itself and help the people of the world to discover a higher meaning and experience of life. So I think it was a real era of Krishnakumarji. And I think slowly people will realize the vision that he held. And I think it would be a great tribute if we can take forward many of the great initiatives that he, you know, started and inspired many of us to pursue.
Absolutely. Dr. Ramanohar, you know, like you said, some of his students are, of course, some of the most well-regarded, well-recognized and eminent Ayurveda doctors around the world today. One of the things, Dr. Ramanohar, that you often say in many of your conversations, and even you've written quite widely about it, is how there is a difference between Ayurveda as lifestyle and then Ayurveda as a medical profession. I think this is a very fine, nuanced difference, which is not always understood as easily by everybody. So could you elaborate on that for us and our viewers?
Yeah, because, you know, Ayurveda is basically primarily dealing with life itself. So it's very much focused on enhancing the quality of life, on bringing what you would call as self-responsibility for one's own health. And in that respect, Ayurveda says that, you know, even you should avoid going to a physician, I mean, if possible, because it means, it is a kind of oversight on your side. If you need treatment and medicine, it's because, you know, you didn't live intelligently. So one of the real focus of Ayurveda is to you know, awaken what you call as health intelligence. Make the person become aware of what is health and take responsibility for one's own health. And this, I think, is the need of the future. We have come to a healthcare system where people are extremely dependent. So on the one hand, I'm also making this distinction because what we don't want is medicalization of Ayurveda. Ayurveda shouldn't also be reduced to a medical system. That is one aspect. So we must bring Ayurveda to the common man. There should not be any restriction for anybody to learn what is Ayurveda because they misunderstand it as a medical system, because it's a way of life. Ayurveda starts with how you understand your constitution, how you can look at yourself as a mirror to know who you are, and accordingly how you can develop a personalized, you know, way of life so that you evolve to higher and higher levels of health. So that way Ayurveda should reach out to the rest of the world. But then Ayurveda also has a, you know, a very specialized kind of approach in dealing with diseases, which of course requires, you know, very specialized training and some background. And so why I'm making this distinction at that level also is that today in many parts of the world, we do not have the environment where we can teach Ayurveda as a medical system, which would require very intense training and, you know, practical and clinical exposure. So a lot of people get lost between these two worlds. You know, they don't really understand this granularity here. And sometimes they learn about Ayurveda, what can actually, you know, empower you, but then they mistake it as the medical aspect of Ayurveda. And then, you know, the very way Ayurveda is expressed and applied in society will become, you know, affected. So what I feel is that much more than being a physician, what we need in the modern world is also life coaching and health coaching. Even before you come to health coaching, you need life coaching. And Ayurveda is fundamentally all about coaching people how to live their lives. And I think this is the most important thing that we require today. I mean, the healthcare burden, the more and more we are focused on disease and curing, we create more and more sick people. I mean, that very idea of a medical system, that is the focus of a healthcare system, is going to create a sick society, because everything is built upon treating sick people. Even the commercial modeling is done with that focus. So we know at one point of time, physicians were paid only if people were not sick. They would get a cut in their pay if people became sick. So this is, I think, the subtle distinction. What we need in the future is health intelligence for all, not health for all or universal health coverage. With that, we cannot really make the planet a healthier planet. And I think Ayurveda has a big role to play in promoting health intelligence.
That's very, very beautifully captured. So on that point, Dr. Ram Manohar, you know, you're saying that Ayurveda is something that people should integrate into their day-to-day lives. It, you know, is a lifestyle. But a lot of people, when they look at Ayurveda and when they think about Ayurveda, their notion is that Ayurveda is this system which is going to impose all kinds of restrictions and not allow them to live a fun and happy life. And so why should they come to Ayurveda and then they run away from it? So what would you say to them?
Yeah, you know, Ayurveda is basically telling you how to be happy, happy without any reason. So that's the goal. Ayurveda wants you to be happy without any reason. Today, we need some reason to be happy. And Ayurveda says also the only way, see, in India, we have this concept of Raksha Bandhan. You know, the bondage for protection. You are creating a bondage that will lead you to freedom. So in Ayurveda, what we are saying is, what is all these diet restrictions for? It is to one day set you free, to take you to a stage where you will not need any restrictions. So it is like when a small plant is growing, it's going to become a big tree, but in that early stage of growth, you put a fence around it so that it is not, you know, destroyed by other animals coming and, you know, grazing on it. But once that plant grows into a big tree, you can even tie all those animals and cows onto its trunk. There is no more any danger that it will be destroyed. So the restrictions that Ayurveda tells is only, you know, in a certain context. It is not a bondage forever. It is in certain contexts, like especially when you are undergoing some treatments or when, depending on your constitution, Ayurveda tells you that if you follow these things, you can overcome that limitations and become stronger and evolve to a higher stage of health and where you become more and more free. Because all focus is moksha or freedom, not bondage. Ayurveda is telling you, dharmartha kama mokshanam. So how do we reach moksha? That is the goal. Moksha is freedom. So Ayurveda is one of the health systems which have told you that the goal of life is not bondage, but freedom. But the bondage that leads you to freedom, that is what we call as a raksha bandha. It is a bondage of protection till you are free. The egg is, you know, enclosed in a shell till it becomes ready to break open that shell and come out as a new life. So that you cannot call that as a bondage. Why is the whole yolk enclosed in an egg and put inside the womb of, you know, inside the, why are we enclosed and inside the womb of another, you know, of the mother? So it's only up to a certain point that Ayurveda, clearly the texts say there are people who can eat whatever they want without thinking about whether it is good or bad for them. It's because their Agni is strong. And if you can make your Agni strong, then you go beyond these limits. So I think it's a misunderstanding that Ayurveda, ultimately what happens is we seek freedom, we end up with bondage. People today become sick. By the time they are old, they are in crutches and support. Whereas Ayurveda tells you can lead a life when in old age you age successfully and you leave this world just like a sunset. You smile upon the whole creation and you leave majestically just like the sun setting. That is the beautiful life that Ayurveda is promising you. And this is the advice and the path that you know Ayurveda offers.
I hope after listening to that, many of our listeners who have been skeptics in the past or are, you know, kind of sitting on the fence are inspired to go and try Ayurveda for better health and a more fulfilling life. Dr. Ramanur, you have been traveling around the world teaching Ayurveda to people in different countries. So how do you explain such an old Indian science to people, you know, who are living in other countries, who don't understand the language, who don't understand a lot of these concepts? How do you explain it to them, and why do you think it resonates with them?
You know, basically, what I have also been surprised is that worldwide, there are people who are already open, because all the places where I've gone and spoken about Ayurveda, these were people who had already developed some receptivity for what is Ayurveda. And that way, it has not been difficult. I mean, I have not had the necessity to actually go into a hostile, you know, community and try to convince them about Ayurveda. I mean, this is, I think, a very big insight for me also, that the world is, you know, becoming open to such systems of healing. And I think one of the reasons is that there is a lot of kind of unmet needs of people with the modern healthcare system. They are finding that more and more the current healthcare system are not able to address issues of disease which, you know, go beyond the body, beyond molecular mechanisms, into deeper aspects of their being. In fact, what I've also found is that outside India, people are able to relate more to the holistic vision of Ayurveda, you know, the spiritual dimensions. And what makes Ayurveda appealing is also this addressing, you know, even how we must live our life, how we must, you know, start our day, how we must eat. The basic things of, you know, living is something which people in many parts of the world do not know. One of the greatest things in India is also that we, first of all, teach, you know, ourselves how we must live our lives. This is very, very important, because there we are in the pursuit of, you know, riches and comforts and your aspirations and goals. And we forget even how we must, you know, live our lives moment by moment. how we can celebrate our own existence, just the joy of being alive. I mean, this is what Ayurveda opens before you. So I think that it is when you are able to relate to these experiences, what is mostly missing in modern society, and explain how this comes to them, then it becomes, they're able to relate to it. And I have to say that this is something which I would like to say. On the one hand, I am working as a researcher. So there is a lot of evidence that we are trying to create. And at one point, I thought that we would be able to propagate Ayurveda only through scientific evidence. But my own tours of different parts of the world made me realize that that is only for the regulators and the scientists. This is not what the people want. The people actually want to relate to something higher, much more than what science can offer. A deeper understanding of themselves, a deeper understanding of their relationship of individuals to the larger universe. And this is what opened up before me also, because up to that time, I was focused merely on generating scientific evidence, trying to explain, you know, why this works in this way scientifically, or why this works that way. So I think to summarize, what I would like to say is that the resurgence of Ayurveda worldwide is going to happen through the people. So it is not to these, we have to work with regulatory agencies, convince the scientific community, but that's not the way Ayurveda is going to spread all over the world. It has to reach out to the people. And more people learn about this and practice in their lives, the more scientists and regulators will not be able to anymore ignore it. That is what has happened in the countries like US, Europe, because people started using it, the governments had to give attention to it. So I think that, so because Ayurveda is about life, and when you are able to bring the basic lessons, the basic experience of life in a profound way, I mean, we will be able to reach out to people. So that's my experience.
That is so true, Dr. Ammanohar. And I think one of our, vision and mission in the Ayurveda Day global celebrations has also been that, you know, how can Ayurveda become a people's movement? Because that really, like you said, that is what makes Ayurveda unique, its ability to resonate with every individual and their living experience. And of course, there is the scientific evidence and so many other aspects, but that really is the core of it. So thank you for explaining that, Dr. Ammanohar. I have one more question for you about the practice of Ayurveda. So, often I have had people ask that is the way they see Ayurveda practiced in certain parts of the country, for example, in the south, like in Kerala, versus if they go to the north, like in Rajasthan or in Maharashtra, it's different. The external manifestation sometimes looks a little different. So is the practice really different, or why are there differences? What is the commonality?
Yeah, I mean, India is actually a subcontinent. It's quite diverse. You know, the cultures are very different. When you move from one state to another, it's almost like leaving one country, and the language changes, the culture changes, but still we don't feel it. That is the beauty of India. Everything has been so unified. Otherwise, it should have been like Europe. We should have had so many countries. So the diversity is there. So you cannot expect Ayurveda to be the same, because Ayurveda is, the principles are same, but according to time and place, Ayurveda itself says that we should adapt. So the adaptation, so the diet of a person living in North India, where the climate can get really cold compared to the South, where it is quite warm and humid always. So the South Indians actually use a lot more spices, like you'd see in Andhra, Tamil Nadu, Kerala. Because if you don't use spices, especially in Andhra, because it's hot and dry, you will not sweat. If you don't sweat, your body will become more hot, and your digestion is weak in a hot weather. So the whole diet practices change. In North India, it is much colder. So you can see people eating in the morning itself sweets and very heavy food, because their digestive system is different. So if that is because Ayurveda gave this individualization. In fact, in one of the texts, it is said, in every 12 yojanas, the culture of the people will change. And so everything has to change. 12 yojanas is very small radius, about 180 kilometers or so. So Ayurveda has described that much diversity is there. So that is why the Kerala, the way Ayurveda is practiced, it's according to the climate here. So we cannot say that it is different. But yet, so this is one thing. So the way Ayurveda was practiced in Gujarat or Maharashtra or Andhra or the Himalayan regions was always, you know, different according to the climate and other things of the people. But another thing that happened was, the, you know, India was subjected to a lot of invasions. You know, a lot, and the north of India has actually really borne the brunt of all these invasions. The south was relatively more safe. So like places like Kerala were almost kind of immune. I mean, we did not have to go through these kind of, you know, trauma that the north of India has. So even many cultures, so that is one is the invasions. The other thing is the exposure to outside cultures, like, you know, the Arabs, the coming of Unani system, the Greek Arabic medicine, that mixing with Ayurveda, and then a lot of mutual exchange of knowledge. So the use of metallic preparations. So many, many such factors, you know, also influenced. And that is why in the north, actually speaking, the there was a crossover. The herbal Ayurveda, the Kerala type of Ayurveda, is actually originated in the Himalayas, in the Charaka Samhita. But that has been preserved in Kerala. And the Siddha system, which is, you know, making use of the herbal mineral preparations, migrated to the north and it got established there. So actually speaking, what is originated in the north has been preserved in the south. And what originated in the south has got preserved in the north. So we have to really distinguish these layers. What are the changes that happens due to local conditions? And what are the changes that came due to political and other influences? Once we, you know, dissect all these layers, we will be able to redevelop a modernized Ayurveda, which is more suitable, you know, for these places. I think such an exercise has to start now. But in essence, the principles of Ayurveda are the same. So similarly, if you go to, I always tell when you go to Germany or Argentina, many people say, we want Kerala Ayurveda. So I ask them, are you in Kerala? Why do you want Kerala Ayurveda? You should have Argentina Ayurveda, because what is there in Argentina, according to that, you have to live your life. Yasya deshasya yojandu. Tajyam tasya aushadhina. If a person living in a particular locality, he should make use of the resources there. That's what Ayurveda says. So it's a principle of Ayurveda that has to spread all over the world. And it has to adapt, you know, according to the conditions. One of my friends, Antonio Morandi, he always says global localization. This is what Ayurveda needs, not globalization. So globally localizing. So the principles are, you know, global, but its applications are very local. And that is the beauty, because we recognize the individuality of every single human being, and we don't want to impose, you know, some standards on all over the world. So celebrating that diversity, even while we perceive that fundamental unity, which is inspired from the Vedic vision, that is how Ayurveda has also developed this kind of a flexibility.
Thank you, Dr. Ram Manohar. That has been such a wonderful conversation. And, you know, as much as I would not like the conversation to end, unfortunately, we do have to bring today's episode to a closing. What I do want to say before we end, though, is that, of course, you know, under your very able leadership, Amrita School of Ayurveda has been the key, one of the key knowledge partners for the Ayurveda Day initiative, which is anchored by India Foundation. And, you know, it's been very integral to our efforts. So I just want to once again, you know, acknowledge that and thank you and thank Amrita School of Ayurveda for all its support and efforts. It was an honor to speak to you, Dr. Manohar.